The first one is February 15th, 1921. That shouldn't mean anything to you yet. The second one is January 28th, 1986. That one might. February 15th, 1921. The place is New York City. In the 1920s, there was a surgeon by the name of Thomas Kane who practiced surgery in one of the major hospitals of New York City. He had for some 37 years leading up to the date I gave you. In addition to being a surgeon, Dr. Kane was also an anesthesiologist. During that time, anesthesiology was not nearly as well developed as it is now. In fact, all they had was what we would call very crude general anesthesiology. Dr. Kane noticed in his efforts as a surgeon that he lost several patients, not because the surgery was unsuccessful, but because the anesthesiology was unsuccessful. They simply never woke up. This led him to pioneer and develop what we now know as local anesthesiology. The idea of not putting the entire body to sleep, only part of it. He developed this in laboratory animals during the years just following World War I, and he became aware or convinced that this could work in humans. But you can understand the difficulty he had in finding someone to be the first one to prove his theory. He looked for several months for someone on whom he could localize an area and perform surgery on a human. Finally, he found a volunteer, and on February 15, 1921, Dr. Kane performed the first recorded surgery using localized anesthesiology. It was an appendectomy. The patient was rolled into the room. Dr. Kane made the normal incision on the abdomen, cutting through the skin and the fat and the tissue, finding the inflamed appendix. He raised it up, he excised it, he tied off the stump as he had done hundreds of times before. And in an era of medical marvel, the patient was up and walking in 2 days and was back to work in 5 days. That was just unheard of in those times. And on that date, Dr. Thomas Kane pioneered what we now know very, very well as local anesthesiology. I told you the date, and I told you the doctor. What I haven't told you was the patient. In order to prove his theory, the doctor and the patient were the same person. Thomas Kane had operated on himself and removed his own appendix. Now, why do I share that with you? Sometimes there is some surgery that is so radical and that is so delicate that we can perform it only on ourselves. And the topic I want to share with you this morning may be just such a thing. But I want us to all be wide awake as we go through this procedure this morning. If there was a painless way to consider this topic, and if I knew it, I would certainly employ it. I just don't know it. But sometimes, unless we're willing to do self-surgery, it seems to me like we're not what we need to be, nor are we what anyone would want to follow. And with that in mind, I'd like to proceed with our topic this morning. What I want to visit with you about for a few minutes is the topic of integrity. Integrity. There are times in our lives when we cannot simply speak the truth, We have to stand up for the truth. There are times in our lives when we come to a point of decision that we have to make quietly in the recesses of our heart, and nobody else knows about it. Decisions where we have to stand all alone for what we believe. Some of you may be at a point like that right now in your life. I don't know. But whether you are right now, you've been there or will be shortly. One thing that I think is very important for us to understand, everything that I do that is wrong is my fault. Period. Everything that you do that is wrong is your fault. Period. Therefore, everything that we do that is wrong is our fault. Period. We live in a society that doesn't like to accept that. We live in a society that's blameless, responsibleless. A society in which everything that goes wrong is someone else's fault. But there are times, and this is one of them, when we need to be men and women, and we need to stand up and accept the fact that everything we do that is wrong is our fault. There is absolutely no substitute for integrity. And there is no such thing as almost having it. Either you do or you don't. Statistics tell us that every year, half of the deaths on our highways are due to either alcohol or drug-related circumstances. But I'm here this morning to tell you that those deaths are not due really to alcohol or drugs. They're due to a breakdown in integrity. Today, most of us can say a word that only a few decades ago we'd never heard of. Acquired immune deficiency syndrome. It just rolls off our tongue. We call it AIDS. Scientists and doctors tell us it's caused by a virus. I'm here to tell you it's caused by a breakdown in integrity. And that's the only thing that will cure it. We live in a society, and the church is afflicted with this also, where homes are broken. Marriages are in disarray, and it's nothing other than simply a loss of integrity. We live in a world today where we shake our head at politics, at the scandals, at the greed, but it's simply a loss of integrity. And there is no substitute for it. I don't care how big you become, I don't care how famous you are, I don't care how rich or how talented you are. There is no substitute for having integrity. Its breakdown is everywhere, and it's affecting us in every way. Its breakdown is so complete that today it's a word that's really not used that often. In fact, in the King James translation, you don't even find the word integrity in the New Testament, even though the concept is all throughout it. It's found 16 times in the Bible, all in the Old Testament, and it comes from the Hebrew word tome, T-O-M-E. And it means, and this is a rather lengthy definition, but I think it's important, so I will read it. It means to be complete, to be whole, to be sound, to have an unimpaired condition, the state of being undivided, the absence of duplicity and hypocrisy, being personally, publicly, and financially accountable, the adherence to a moral code of value and ethics. End quote. With that definition, One with integrity will not try to manipulate other people or use power for self-aggrandizement. People that have integrity, with that definition, maintain a servant's heart. They answer the hard questions that come up. They confront error, whether it's in their lives or in the lives of others, because they want to be right more than anything else in the world. I believe each society and each definition and each civilization has a little different word for integrity. In America, we use words like courage. And if you'll allow me this morning, I'll use the word guts, because I think that's oftentimes what integrity boils down to. Having the guts to do what's right, no matter what. To do what's right in the leading of our service and the teaching of our classes. To do what's right in our schools. To do what's right in the business world. The courage, the conviction to do the job right. To keep our promises, all of them. Now let's just pause for a moment and see what that might entail. David in Psalms chapter 7 verse 8 says, "Judge me, O Lord, according to my righteousness and according to my integrity." If the Lord were to judge you based upon your integrity, how would you fare? A little later in Psalms 25:21, he writes, "Let integrity and uprightness preserve me." Would our integrity preserve us, or would we simply rot? Psalm 78 and 12. "So he," David, "fed them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them by the skillfulness of his hand." David did it as king just like he had done it as a boy, as a shepherd. What David did as a teenage shepherd, he kept on doing as king. He didn't change. Popularity and power didn't go to his head. He kept on keeping his word. And it translated even to his son, because his son, in Proverbs chapter 20, verse 7, writes, "A just man walketh in his integrity, and his children are blessed after him." One of the wonderful things about integrity is, if we as parents and grandparents do this right, and we're going to talk more about that tonight, parenting and grandparenting, but if we do our jobs right, integrity is one of the things we can pass along to our children. It's like our thumbprint, that in an invisible fashion we can imprint upon the character of those that God has entrusted to us. Nothing is more permanent, and I believe nothing is more obvious than a young person who has been stamped with integrity. Integrity is not so much how you think in the abstract. Integrity is what you do, the way you act. Ted Engstrom once said, and I like this, "Integrity is doing what you said you would do." That's it. End quote. Not complicated, not fancy, hard, but simple. Integrity is doing what you said you would do. Do we have integrity? Well, before we answer too fast, let me just take you through four or five illustrations. recently enough that many of us can remember, and it sounded like somebody did it here last night, I don't know. You may have stood at a place about like that, in front of a group much like this, and looked at another person and said, I take you, for better, for worse, for richer, or for poorer, in sickness and in health, till death do we part. That was a promise. People with integrity keep their promises, don't they? We're not a nation of integrity, are we? Sometimes we're not even a church of integrity. Many of you, myself included, came to the front of a building much like this, and for many of you, this very building, and said to a group of people, I want to serve the Lord. You made a commitment. You made a promise to God, didn't you? Now, I have baptized a lot of people. I have never yet baptized one who came forward and said, I want to serve God except when. They always come forward and they say, I want to serve God, period. How are we doing making that, keeping that commitment? Even in little things, you promise to return a phone call. Do you? Believe me, I know how much you don't want to sometimes. You go to work. Do you take integrity to work with you? If you do, you're going to stick out. Because most, if not virtually all of the people you work with don't give 8 hours work for 8 hours pay. They don't do it. You know it, and I know it, and I've never gone to work with you. That's just people. Some of you work in an environment where if you try to give an honest day's work for an honest day's pay, you will be ridiculed, you will be looked down upon, and many times they will try everything they can to keep you from doing it. But you and I are to have integrity, aren't we? You tell your children or your grandchildren that you're going to do something with them on Saturday, and then something better comes along. What do you do? What do you do? Sometimes we forget what a holy thing a promise is. When you and I make promises, God for sure and other people have the right to expect us to keep them. I'm getting more sensitive about this the older I get. When I began this work full time, I can't count the number of people that would say, tell your mom and dad hi, and I would say, okay. 9 times out of 10, I never did that because I forgot. Now I try to say, I will if I remember. So that when I forget 9 times out of 10, I don't feel so bad. Small thing? It's a thing of integrity. I want, when I tell someone something, I want them to be able to know that to the best of my ability, I'm going to do that. And if I don't think I've got it in my ability, I'm not going to promise it. Because I believe that's a biblical position. You know, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, it says, the Lord is faithful. Now, what's that mean? God doesn't have faith. God can't have faith by definition. If God could have faith, then He wouldn't be God, because faith is the belief in things that you haven't yet seen. And if God hasn't seen it, then He's not omnipresent, so He can't be God. You just go in circles with that. When it says God is faithful, it means He is faithful to keep every single promise He's made. That's what that means. And you and I ought to be down on our knees every night, thanking Him that He keeps His promises better than we do. Because if He didn't, we would be in a world of hurt. You know, I was thinking back in my childhood to those stories in the Old Testament that I just loved as a child. And names like Joseph, Joshua, Daniel came to mind. And you know what every one of those men had? Integrity. That's what allowed Joseph to flee Potiphar's wife, was integrity. It wasn't that she was appealing. It wasn't that he had all the women he could handle. He didn't. He had integrity. Joshua, after leading the people through the land, in the closing of that book says, and I quote in Joshua 24:15, "And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were in the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." You know what that is? That's integrity. That's when you say, "I'm going to serve the Lord even when it's not convenient. Even when it's not popular." Daniel, 85 years old. Daniel chapter 6. They try to find something wrong with a man who's been serving for 70 years in Babylon and then Medo-Persia. And they look back on that 70-year record and they can't find one single blemish on it. One single blemish in a 70-year career and they can't find it. Now that's integrity. You remember Uriah when David tried to get him drunk and have him killed so that he could soothe his conscience as he took Bathsheba? And Uriah refused to drink or to lay with his wife because there was a battle going. Uriah had more integrity drunk than David had sober. The Bible is just full of men and women with integrity. I believe there are two great tests of integrity. The first test is adversity. When times get tough, when people don't respond, when our dreams begin to fade, sometimes turn into nightmares, the job doesn't go like we'd want, home isn't what we'd want, the family, our health, even the church sometimes isn't what we'd like for it to be. Well, Solomon addressed this again when in Proverbs chapter 24, verse 10, he said, "If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small." In other words, if you fall in adversity, you really didn't have integrity to start with. But as great a test of adversity is to integrity, I think there's a greater and a more difficult test. And it's one that really, really causes us a great amount of difficulty. And that's the test of prosperity. For every one man that fails the test of adversity, I believe there are probably at least 10 that fail the test of prosperity. When things are going well, everything seems to increase except one thing. And that's integrity. Adversity can be tough, but at least it causes us to come back to the basics. Prosperity doesn't. It causes us to leave them. That's why I believe in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 10, Solomon wrote, "He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver. He that loveth abundance will not be satisfied with increase. It's all vanity." Isn't that true? If only I had this, I'd be happy. I get it, and I'm no more happy. If only I could do that. If only I didn't have to worry about that. The happiest times of my life and yours are times when we had the least. I'm not saying go out and get rid of everything you had, but that's just the truth, isn't it? Because things don't bring happiness. Christ does that. If God has moved a Darius into your life, and He's moved a Darius into many of our lives, someone who's allowed us to be blessed beyond our wildest imagination, what's that done, or what will that do to our integrity? Those of you in the business world, and most of you are in varying ways, have seen people compromise integrity time after time after time for advancement, for achievement. And yet even some of us sometimes fail to understand or remember what our holy God is all about. And what He's about is keeping our promises and keeping our integrity. J. Oswald Sanders, in one of his writings, wrote, "Only a very few can be raised to a position of great responsibility without losing their spiritual equilibrium." I like that. Very few people can be raised to a position of great responsibility without losing their spiritual equilibrium. I can look back on my life and some of the things I prayed for and I didn't get. You know what I'm most thankful for right now is that I didn't get them. Because the Lord only knows where they might have taken me. I thought I needed them. I thought I wanted that job. I thought I wanted that girl. I thought I wanted this. I thought I wanted that. And I didn't know diddly squat in terms of what was best for me. Would you change anything in your life? Well, I'm going to maybe be just a little venturesome. I wouldn't change one single thing in my life. Now, don't take that wrong. That doesn't mean there aren't some things in my life that don't need changing. But I am afraid if I changed anything in my life, it might tilt it where I might not be here this morning. And I'm not willing to take that chance. Because God views my life from the top of the building, and He sees the big picture. I just see it from the street, and all I see is that moment that happens to be passing in front of me. Do you have people around you that love you enough to be honest and tell you what you need to hear rather than what you want to hear? Do you have people around you that love your soul more than they do your feelings? If you do, you're blessed. Because most people live and die and never have someone that loves them that much. Even husbands and wives are very seldom that honest with each other. Do we have integrity? Well, let's simply ask ourselves, do we do what's right when no one else is looking? Do we do what's right when most everyone else is compromising? Do we keep our promises, not most of the time, but all of the time? Do you? Do I? Well, if not, now's the time to start, because that's what integrity means. You can do a lot of things in this world without integrity. You can be a doctor without having integrity. You can be a dentist without having integrity. And certainly you can be a lawyer without having one. But there's one thing you can't do in this world without integrity. You can't be a Christian. And that's our job, isn't it? January 28th, 1986. That was the day, that was the morning that the Challenger spacecraft exploded. Christy McAuliffe and the rest of the crew perished. We either saw it live or we saw tape after tape after tape of that, didn't we? The final verdict, as best I can tell, is that there was a loss in the integrity of the seals that went around some of the housing. And while that may be technically correct, that's not really true. It wasn't the loss in the integrity of the seals. It was the loss in the integrity of the men and women that put them together, who put profits ahead of doing the job right, who put deadlines ahead of what was really needed. A loss of integrity. A young girl, valedictorian in her high school class, went off to college, and in one particular class, she just wasn't doing well. Try as hard as she would get a D or an F. She knew, without being proud, that she was working harder than virtually everyone in the class. And she knew, based upon other classes, she was as smart, if not sharper, than most of them. And she discovered that in that class there was a ring of cheating going on, in which students were getting grades not based upon their effort, but based upon their cheating. She took it to her professor, and he, in essence, said, "I don't want to hear about it." She took it to the dean of the department. He didn't want to hear about it. She ultimately took it to the president of the college, and she got the same response, ultimately leading to her having to withdraw from that college and pursue her education at another institution. But as she left, she made a comment that I liked. She said, "I may not have an A in that class. I may not have a degree from this college. But what I do have is my integrity." Young people, you are going to be tested. There are going to be times when you're going to be away from the environment you grew up in. And that's when you're going to find out whether you have it or not. Men, there will be promotions that you will not get, and you will have to choose not to pursue, because in order to get them and pursue them, you would have to compromise your integrity. And ladies, the same can be said for you. Integrity is simply doing what's right, no matter who can see. But integrity is one of those Christian marks that the world notices. And even though its reaction may be hard to read, I believe they admire it, because there are so few men and women of integrity. Doing what's right, because it's right. We're going to close our thoughts this morning and extend the gospel invitation. Doing what's right includes serving the Lord. Not because it's popular, because outside of this building it's not. Not because the majority do it, because they don't. Most people aren't thinking about God right now. They're thinking about something else. But we're the children of God, and we march to a different drummer. If we can help you in any way in your walk with the Lord, we invite you to come as we sing the final number.